What room? What's
room?
The
gnome
room.
The what room? Bone? Golem room? Why is that a good golem room? Nice. Okay. I see some pictures of you guys up there on the wall. There's a future golem room. Okay. Everyone has a source sheet? Okay. This is a shiur this evening that, in theory, we could have waited until before Pesach and maybe given it then, but thank God we have other stuff, we have plenty of stuff to do then. But this is certainly an appropriate topic for Bo, and that is because a number of the important psukim that the Gemara learns from the mitzvah of Matzah are mentioned in this coming week's Parsha. And what I'd like to do with you tonight is to share with you my, I guess you could say, expansion or expanded version of a chiddush that I first heard 15 years ago, maybe 14, 15 years ago, from a Rosenzweig. And a Rosenzweig gave it more skeletally, the Gemaras, and we'll see the Rishonim and the Vilna Gaon. I heard from him, but over the years I've been developing the idea, looking for more sources that I believe support his wonderful chiddush. So let's begin with the following. Let's just see the three psukim in our parsha that are learned. And then we'll see a pasuk in Devarim, which is related, and then we can see how the Gemara has learned the mitzvah. So the pasuk tells us in Perek Yudbet, pasuk Ches, "V'achlu es habasar b'layla hazeh sli'esh matzos amorim yochluhu." Right. This is, of course, the context is the Karban Pesach, and we know this is the pasuk that tells us the Karban Pesach was a sandwich. Right. Could have been like a burger's bar or something. You know, it was matzah on top and on bottom. Right? At least Hillel understood it certainly that way. You used to have a sandwich, and the condiment was maror. And they had matzah as the, if you will, like the bread, if you will, havdil. And you had, of course, the Karban Pesach in the middle. Later on in the same parak, we have two further psukim. One says, Shivas Yomim Matzos Tochelu, how you eat matzah for 7 days. And then the final pasuk in the parak and in the parsha that relates to the mitzvah talks about Berishon Barba Asar Yom L'Chodesh Be'erev Tochlu Matzos. On that night, the night of the 14th going into the 15th, i.e. the night of Seder, we have a mitzvah to eat matzah. So what have we seen so far? We've seen, number one, the connection to Karban Pesach, which is repeated in the last pasuk about eating it the Seder night, although there's no reference to Karban Pesach. But the first and the third pasuk that we just saw, those two, are both related to the mitzvah of eating matzah the Seder night. And obviously the context is the Karban Pesach. The middle of the three psukim that we saw, the one in the middle at the end of the first line, speaks about how long the duration of the mitzvah is. Obviously midaraisa, the holiday is 7 days. Shivas Yamim. Later in Devarim, we have a very famous pasuk, famous because it creates so many problems for us, and that is the pasuk of Sheshes Yamim Tocha Matzos. And I hope at least, if not beforehand, then by now, the problem is obvious. Right? The pasuk in our parsha says you have matzah for 7 days, and here we have this mysterious pasuk that says you eat matzah for 6 days. So the question is how to obviously resolve that blatant contradiction. That's the most obvious problem. And the secondary issues are how does any of this relate to the mitzvah of eating matzah at the Seder night? The third issue, which we'll also discuss imminently, is how does this relate to the Karban Pesach, which of course is very relevant since unfortunately we don't have a Karban Pesach. Can we take a look at the very famous Gemara from Arvei Pesachim, Daf Kuf Ches, Amar Aleph? The Gemara tells us the following drasha: Tanya Kavasei Derava, Sheish Yes Yamim Tocha Matzos Uvimashvi Yaseres Hashem Elokecha. That was the continuation of that pasuk from Dvarim. Mashvi Rishus Av Sheish Yes Yamim Rishus. So the first attempt is a very extreme. The Gemara says, just like apparently if it's only a 6 day mitzvah from that pasuk, that means that the 7th day there is no mitzvah, so rishus, maybe we could darshan that that's a yotzim and a klal, who's coming to teach on the whole klal. And therefore perhaps we could come to the extreme conclusion, av sheshes yamim rishus, maybe the entire holiday there's no mitzvah to eat matzah, in essence all 7 days are rishus. My timer, have a davar shayim b'chlal, yotzim and a klal, lo lamed al atzmo yasa, lo lamed al klal kul yasa. Right? This is one of Rabbi Shmuel's famous 13 principles, which we say in davening every morning, 13 ways that Chazal darshan Tarshav Achsav. So we start off with 7 days, then you have six. That means that last day was in the original klal, when it said 7 days, it was excluded. And we asked if it was in a klal, then it was excluded. Lo alatzmo yatsa ala klal kulo yatsa. It's coming to teach us back about the whole klal. But again, just imagine at this point the Gemara having a very extreme havamina. There's no mitzvah to eat matzah throughout the rest of Yontif. So then the Gemara says, how far are you going to go? Would you even push the envelope so extreme and say that there's no mitzvah to even eat at the Seder night? Yachach laila harishon rishus? Could it be, if that's what you're saying, all 7 days there's no mitzvah? We have a pasuk that specifically speaks about the Korban Pesach. That seems to be independent. Whoa, hold on one second. Well, if that's the case, now that we don't have a base of Mikdash, now there should not even be a mitzvah at the Seder. And in fact, the halacha, there's no mitzvah daraisa to eat marah nowadays. The fact that we eat marah at the Seder is only mitzvah rabbanon. Bismanch ain't a base of Mikdash kayim minayin. How do we know? And again, you can see lurking behind the question of the Gemara the assumption that there must be an answer. It's not. This does not look like a completely open-minded question. They're searching for an answer that they want. How do we know that there's a mitzvah to eat matzah at the Seder? We are stuck. The Shiva versus the Shisha, that took over the whole holiday. Maybe you want to separate the Seder night because of Amasas Marim, that only works for the Beis HaMikdash. So for the rest of the centuries, and we haven't had a Beis HaMikdash, what are we left with? Gemara concludes, Talmud Lomar, Be'erev, Toflu Matzos, HaKosuv Kovachova. So that third pasuk from our parsha, Be'erev, Toflu Matzos, which specifically focuses on the night. So again, when we read the three pasukim from our parsha, I mentioned to you that in essence, that's similar to the first pasuk, because it's both talking about the Seder night. However, and I did not mislead you, that's true, but the Gemara is pointing out a crucial difference. Even though they're both talking about the same night, one pasuk explicitly mentions the Korban Pesach, the other pasuk is just talking about the night of the Korban Pesach. So, the Pashtus, there's no difference. But the Gemara says that Nafka Mina is when there is no Korban Pesach. What you see from the Erev Tov Matzos is that the night of Korban Pesach has a Chi of Matzah even without Korban Pesach. And therefore it comes out, says the Gemara, this is how we paskin, that Bezman Hazeh, there is a mitzvah to eat matzah mid araisa, even though we don't have the Korban Pesach, as opposed to Marah, for example, which would only be the Rabbanon. But in fact, the Rambam paskins this way. Take a look at the Lashon of the Rambam. Mitzvah same in our Torah, l'achol matzah, when? The Seder night. But what was the implication of our Gemara? The implication of our Gemara was, what about after the Seder? What about the rest of Pesach? What is the status of Matzah? What's the pashas of our Gemara? Right? What was the first stage of the Gemara? What did it say about the remainder of Yontif? Rishus. It's never explicitly mentioned at the end of the Gemara, but that was clearly the implication of the first stage of the Gemara. And that is what the Rambam says. If you look at the continuation, the Rambam says, Avo b'shar haregel chalamoi, the second days, achilas masa rishus, ratzo ochel matzah, ratzo ochel orez, you want to eat matzah, that's fine. You want to have rice, or rice cakes, or something else. Again, he's not talking about kidneys, obviously. As a Sephardi, he doesn't have to worry about that. But you can eat whatever you want, and I substitute gefilte fish. Or Bartons, all of Hashem. Do they still have Bartons anymore, right? From my youth, I couldn't live without the almond juice. With that toffee, geschmack. Anyway, there's certain foods that, when I was younger, it was before the total explosion. I'm not that old, but I was before the total explosion of kosher products on Pesach. Like, most of the time, you notice that it wasn't as good as the rest of the year. But even when I was a kid, there was a few dishes and a few candies and stuff that you only had on Pesach, which were better than the rest of the year. I never understood how come I could never eat matzah bread the rest of the year. And it's like the best food ever, but you wouldn't dream of eating it in the middle of January. I don't know, but I guess you want to whet your appetite for that for the week. Anyway, but the Bartons, the almond shoes were such a pleasure. Anyway, Ein Olam Haba. Lamaisa, if you eat the Bartons shoes, if you eat cholent, if you eat a kugel or anything else, they're nice. They're Jewish ethnic foods. It's Minhag Yisrael. But at the end of the day, as much as I've looked and tried for years to find a mitzvah to eat cholent, there is none. It's a rishus. It's good, it's yummy, it's tasty, but there's no mitzvah per se to eat cholent. And says the Rambam, you want to eat cholent, you want to eat cholent, you want to eat rice, you eat rice, you want to eat matzah, you eat matzah. The only time there's a mitzvah accomplished by a cha-ching on the mitzvah meter is at the Seder, which is a simple understanding of the Gemara. The Meiri, who I think we've mentioned in previous shurim, even though the Meiri wrote a commentary on the Gemara, very often the Meiri is in essence a parish of the Rambam. The Meiri, more often than not, follows the Rambam, and very often is kind of showing you how the Rambam would have learned the Gemara. So what does the Meiri say explicitly? For Yadata, Shahamatsa, Ein Chiyuva Kol Shiva, El Laila Harishon Belvad, only the first night. And what about the rest of the holiday? Hashar Yamim, Kol Sheino Ochel Chametz, Ochel Mashir. So eat whatever you want, but just don't eat chametz. Okay? So that is what we've seen until now. However, There is a group, a small group of Mepharshim, who disagree. They disagree with the simple understanding of the Gemara, disagree with the Rambam, and the predominant view is Shulchan Aruch and Rishonim, and they hold that there is more going on. You really think, is it really true that there's no difference between eating matzah, the rest of Nantif, and eating gefilte fish, or eating some other food? It's really nothing, it's mamash rishus. So again, that's the Rambam, that's the Gemara, the Miri, Shulchan Aruch, fine. But there are a group of Mepharshim who disagree. One of those Mepharshim is the Chizkuni. The Chizkuni is a commentary on the Chumash, and his comment is in our Parsha on the Pasuk that we saw, Pasuk Ches of Be'erev Tochlu Matzos, which we know again came after two other Pasuk from the same parak. And the Chizkuni says the following, Mikol Makom Matzos Tochelu Shivas Yomim Ksiv. Now that's actually not, that's the reverse of the order of the Pasuk. He's going to correct himself, so to speak, in a second. But the bottom line is, he says, I don't understand. How could the Pasuk that he's commenting on, which is Be'erev Tochlu Matzos, how could we just be focusing on one night when we know that there's another Pasuk out there that speaks about matzah for 7 days? We also know there's one for 6 days. It's really complicated. But he says, what about, how do you resolve this? Kulamar, how does he put, you know, if you'll forgive the question, he puts it to cholent. But if you shake it all up, what comes out, says the Chizkuni? Kulamar, im ochel matzah kol shivas hayamim, mikol makom kiyem hu apasuk, shal shivas yamim matzos tochem. Now who wants to tell me in their own words, what do you think the Chizkuni is saying? Can't hear you, what? What's the time in their own words? What's the Chizkuni saying? Not to themselves, in their own words. There's a difference. Excellent. Very good. That's what we call in halacha, right? Not a mitzvah chayuvis where I'm obligated if I don't put on tefillin. That's an avera. It's a bittel, which is asay. But then there are all sorts of mitzvahs called the mitzvah kiyumis, which is if I don't do it, it's not an avera. But if I do it, I get a mitzvah. Now again, the simplest thing in the Gemara and the Rambam is that masa is not even that. It's no better than the gefilte fish or anything else. But says the Chizkuni, on the one hand, when is there a chiyuv? The erev tochlu matzos. Why does the pasuk also then say yeshivas yamim matzos tochelu? Because even though there's not a chiyuv, it's not tochlu, you have to eat. But if you do eat shivas yamim, there is a kiyum, there is a mitzvah. Now, even more explicit, and most famously, this is the shita of the Vilna Gaon. There is a kind of what you call an intellectual biography, if you will, of the Vilna Gaon, written by his early students, known as the Meister Rav. Basically, it's a collection. It doesn't discuss, you know, what he was like when he was four. It's not that kind of a biography. It gives you a list of the Meister Rav, the hanhagos, the practices, especially the ones that were a little bit unique or idiosyncratic, of the Vilna Gaon. And in that recollection, it's quoted by others, the Mishnah Berurah, the Chayyadim, other people quote this in the name of the Gaon also. But the most primary source we have of the Vilna Gaon's practice is this book, Meister Rav. And it tells us the following, very explicitly. Shiva Shabbat Tocha Matzos, says the Vilna Gaon, call Shiva Mitzvah. Now how could you say it's a Mitzvah? Didn't the Gemara say it's a Rishus? Doesn't the Rambam say it's a Rishus? How could you go ahead and call it a Mitzvah? So he explains, Ve'enu Karla Rishus, El Gabe Rishona Shehi Chova. Well, mitzvah l'gabei chova, reshus kari lei, afal pikein mitzvah d'araisa hu. In other words, we have an objective reshus, and then we have a relative reshus. The terminology used by Gemara or Rishonim is not always absolute or objective. Sometimes it's relative. If the Gemara is speaking about two things, which in our modern jargon, or our lumdisha jargon, we refer to as a chayuvis or a kiyumis, in the Zman of the Gemara, says the Vilna Gaon, they might have referred to that as mitzvah and reshus. But they meant by that, mitzvah milashon mitzuveh. There's an obligation, there's a burden, there is a certain necessity. That's a mitzvah. A reshus, you don't have to do it. But if you do it, it doesn't mean it's nothing, it doesn't mean it's gefiltefish. It just means you didn't have to do it. So if I'm in a vacuum, I'm just talking about one mitzvah and I call it a reshus. So then, presumably it means just that, nothing more. But if in the context of talking about a more urgent chova, and then I call the next thing a reshus, that might only mean, says the Vilna Gaon, and we have this in other times, that mitzvah l'gabei chova, relative to the first thing, it's as if it's a reshus. But doesn't it really mean a reshus? It means that what we said before excellently, a mitzvah kiyumis. And therefore the Vilna Gaon continues. The Gemara says, right, I'm not by show of hands, how many people put on tefillin on Chol Hamoed? Pretty standard. It's about a third, maybe a little bit less. I think my general experience is that's pretty much the case. The reasons for that being that the Chassidim, which includes also people who are actually Hasidim, and also people like me who are descendants of Hasidim, have the minhag not to put on tefillin. And instead of just being a straight misnagdic versus Hasidic minhag, the Vilna Gaon, as we'll see, Vilna Gaon and also the Briskers also felt you shouldn't put on tefillin. So that swept the rest of the Masnagdic show. So there's a few holdouts, a few of the Yekkes, and a few of the proud Ashkenazim, and they put on tefillin. But it's very much more common, especially in Israel. In Israel, it's a universal minhag not to put on tefillin. Anyone who's halach lamaisa, anyone who's in Israel, b'chalmoyden, is your personal minhag to put on tefillin, it would be usher to put them on in shul. You put them on in your hotel room or your home. You would not do it in public in Israel. Minhag Yisrael is for sure not to put on tefillin b'chalmoyden. In America or the rest of Chutzparts, there's really more of a chillant. But even my impression is, and I think it's only getting more and more as the generations go, that the rove do not put on tefillin. Now, why don't we? What's the issue? Leave aside why you would leave it or not. But what's the issue? The issue which we know from Shabbos and Yom Tov, why don't we put on tefillin there? Also, there's an idea that Yom tefillin are an oath, tefillin are a sign of a relationship with Hashem, and Yom Tov and Shabbos are also an oath. And once we have an oath of Shabbos and Yom Tov to put on the tefillin oath, it's like an insult to the oath of, you know, it would be like a girl wearing two wedding bands. You know, I already accepted yours, I can't accept his. So that's basically the idea. So the Gemara says in Menachos that we don't put on, that Yom Tov is also an oath. The question is, what is the oath of each Yom Tov? Is it relevant for Chol HaMoed? So some say that the oath of Pesach is Chametz. So if the oath of Pesach is Chametz, that applies, including Chol HaMoed. So of course you would not put on tefillin on Chol HaMoed. Others say that the oath is Matzah. Well, Matzah is only a mitzvah on the first day, so maybe there's no oath left over for Chol HaMoed, and then you would put on tefillin. So in the middle, those are the two extremes. So to speak, threading the needle, a middle position, says the Vilna Gaon. V'chein perishu, Yom Tov ein tzarech os, Pesach b'matzah, sukkos b'sukkah, od kamarayos. In other words, what is he saying? I hold that the oath of Pesach is matzah. But that doesn't mean that it's nothing on Chol HaMoed. That is a proof, he says, to my point, that matzah is relevant, because he's working with the assumption there's no tefillin on Chol HaMoed. It must be that the oath of matzah is relevant all Yom Tov. There's no chiyuv on Chol HaMoed. I know, but there's a mitzvah kiyumis. And as long as there's a mitzvah kiyumis to eat matzah on Chol HaMoed, it can be an oath for the whole Yom Tov. And then they whoever the exact authors are of this piece, they write very beautifully, they have an insight into the Vilna Gaon. This was a beloved mitzvah to the Vilna Gaon to eat matzah all 7 days. And then they add a very important point of biographical information. Now, in modern times, what do we call Shalosh Shudas on the last day of Yom Tov? Adam Newman, come on. There you go. Right, at least in our show, we say Ne'ilah Sachar. Right? The Hasidim can call it a Shudas Mashiach, all the Babichers, but the rest of us who are only Neo-Hasidic, so we call it a Ne'ilah Sachar. Where does it come from? Ne'ilas HaChag has gotten very popular, and we do it now on Shavuos, and we do it on Sukkot. It all comes from the Vilna Gaon, it all comes from Pesach, and it all comes from this Maaseh Rav. This is it, you just saw it. This is the start of the whole phenomenon. The Vilna Gaon loved matzah so much, he held it was a mitzvah every time you ate matzah, and therefore, even though he never had Shal Shudas on a regular Yom Tov, because there's no mitzvah, but the last day of Pesach, as the mitzvah is ebbing away, every bit that sun sets even more, the Vilna Gaon would make sure to have extra Shal Shudas, by which he meant washing, so that he could have matzah, and have the last bits of morsels of matzah to fulfill this mitzvah kiyumis of matzah, which was, again, in his opinion. Now, if you hold like the Rambam, you hold like the simple understanding of the Gemara and the Meiri. So there's no point. I mean, you could, but there's nothing gained by it. You might as well eat the Barton's almond chews or those, you know, jelly candies and the other popular Pesach stuff. So there's nothing gained. But the Vilna Gaon Lashitoso, since he held that there's a mitzvah, even on the last day, every minute of Pesach, there's another mitzvah to eat as much matzah as you can. So basically what we've seen is two approaches to matzah for the rest of the duration of Yom. If everyone agrees that there's a chiyuv da'araisa, even nowadays, to have kazayis, have matzah, on the Seder night, halavai, this year we should already have it with the Karban Pesach, but even without the Karban Pesach, there's a mitzvah d'oraisa, and it's an absolute chiyuv. If one does not eat kazayis of matzah, that is a bittul mitzvah asay d'oraisa, very bad avera. However, the big question, which is very unclear, is, what about the rest of Yom Tov? After the Seder, or if you're in Chuslar, it's the two Sedarim. What is about the rest of the Chag? Pashas of the Gemara, the Rambam, Meiri, and others, Shacharach, I didn't put it on the sheet, but the Meiri as well, nothing, garnished. It's like having your favorite food. It's chicken soup. That's all it is. But you have the Vilna Gaon, the Chizkuni, and I put also here on the sheet, Aruch HaShulchan Paskin, like the Vilna Gaon. Also, the Mishnah Berurah does not, but the Aruch HaShulchan does, but there's a mitzvah kiyumis, it's not an obligation, but any bit of matzah you have is not just chicken soup, it's not just gefilte fish, there's an actual mitzvah to have it. So far, everyone with me? That was a silent, yes. Affirmative, yes. Non-response? Yeah. Okay, good. Any questions? Yeah?
Can you say that the reasons that Shes Yom is because 6 days would be a mitzvah kiyumis and 7 to the first day, I guess, would be a mitzvah kiyumis?
You could, maybe that's how the Vilna Gaon would read it, in Efanami. But that's not the simple understanding of the Gemara at all.
I mean, maybe that's why one place it says Shes Yom the Torah and that's the way that the Torah is both.
And about, you know, again, the question is, if you say six days, is that excluding the first day? You're saying it excludes the first day, but the Gemara understood it was excluding the last day.
So that is not from the question.
That's the second half of the question.
Yeah,
right, right.
Right.
Right. Okay. Anyway, that's our approach. So what I want to share with you with the following, and this is, as I said before, this is a chiddush. I hold it's a beautiful chiddush that I heard from my Rabbi Rosenzweig many years ago. And that is, it could either stand on its own, or perhaps maybe it's really the deeper understanding of the Vilna Gaon. I'm not sure. It's either a third approach, or perhaps it's even the truer approach of the Vilna Gaon. And that relates to a whole different issue, which we have not mentioned until now. And that is the relationship between matzah and chametz. The pasuk in Devarim at number 3 on your source sheet connects the two. Lo socha alav chametz, shevas yamim tocha alav matzos. It's a weird pasuk. Right? These are two major mitzvos. And they're just like a run-on sentence. They're just run together. It's like a non sequitur. It just goes jumbled together. And in fact, because of this awkward sentence, this awkward pasuk, the Gemara, and at least two that I put on the sheet, and there's probably one or two more I could have, darshins, lahalacha, very important rules based on the relationship between matzah and chametz. So for example, the Gemara im sachem am dachlamet hay at the bottom of your sheet. What ingredients are kosher to make matzah with. For example, the Vilna Gaon mentioned rice, which is not. If I ground up rice, or I ground up corn, instead of making a corn muffin, I make corn matzah. Is that kosher for the mitzvah? The answer is no. What is allowed? So the halacha is the chameshes haminim. But how do we know that? The Gemara does not take that for granted. How do we know that? So the Gemara on Daf Lamed Hey tells us, based on our pasuk, which we just read, juxtaposing matzah and chametz, the Gemara tells us that, what in conclusion, I'm just reading the underlying part, dvarim haboyim lidei chimutz, adam yotzem lidei chavas matzah. Yotzu elo, she'ein boy lidei chimutz, elo lidei sirchon. The definition, again, think about this, this Gemara is very significant. The definition of what can create the chefts of matzah is not defined independently. It's not defined in any affirmative or positive way. This is what the ingredients are because X or Y, in any positive sense. What is it defined as? Non-chametz. Only something that could have become chametz. Let's imagine, you know, the 18 minutes that we all grew up with, and if you ever went to a matzah factory, you know, you hear the guy yelling at the old Russian ladies. It doesn't matter what century or what country or what city you're in. It's always old Russian ladies who are in the matzah factory. Okay. So, please come on in. Or not, it's okay too. So, 18 minutes. So if this ingredient with water, mixed with flour, now turned into flour, if I would have just let it go 19, 20 minutes, it would have been chametz. Oh! So if you got it under the gun and you finished it by 17 minutes, that could be matzah. But what is matzah? Something that didn't become chametz. Now, I don't know about you, but that to me is not a given. That is a big surprise. The definition of the cheftz of matzah, says the Gemara, is something that could have become chametz, and did. And if it couldn't have become chametz, because, and now what? Why these five ingredients are what make chametz is a separate sugya. We're not discussing that, but the Gemara here assumes it, the Gemara proves it, but that's not our topic tonight. Only things that could become chametz, those are the things that could become matzah. That same theme is continued in one of the most amazing Gemaras you will ever see anywhere, in the next page. Daf Mem Gimel Amud Beis. The Gemara Pesachim has, to what all the years I've been looking and looking, is still to this day the most extreme, shocking, and amazing havamina I've ever seen in a Gemara. Gemara is discussing the obligation of women. Are women obligated in the mitzvos hayom of the Seder? So the two big ones that discussed here are the Daraisa ones, namely matzah and chametz. So the Gemara, again, with the same pasuk we started with, which compares matzah and chametz to the pasuk in Devarim, so the Gemara is discussing these two mitzvahs. And the Gemara starts off by saying, well, there must be a connection. Now, whenever you have a connection with two things, it's very circular, and it all depends on where, you know, it's like a Ferris wheel, you know, where we get on and where we're going to get off. So the Gemara is going to try both options. But the first option the Gemara considers is, at the end of the line, Kol sheshno b'kum ochel matzah, yeshno b'bal tocho chametz. Hani noshi hoi v'lesnu b'kum ochel matzah, the havel b'sesh man grama, eimo b'bal tocho chametz, nami lesne k'mash malon. I read it fast, but maybe it sunk in. If it did, you'd be screaming and jumping. So maybe it didn't sink in. The Gemara contemplates a havamina, that since there's a connection between chametz and matzah, it assumes as the first assumption that women will be pater for matzah because it's a mitzvah seshman grama. Ordinarily, women are pater for seshman grama. And if we assume that that's the defining characteristic, that that's what's schlepping the train is matzah, so then what will that schlep along with it? That the women are even pater from the isra daraisa shiyesh bakares of chametz. Now this, as far as I can tell, and again, please, somebody who finds a more shocking havamina than anywhere, call me, because I'm looking for 15 years. This is an extremely astounding statement by the Gemara. A chiyuv kares, women will be mutterin? It's against the Mishnah. The Mishnah says that women and men are equal in all mitzvahs kol sase. A kares? That's what we're going to all of a sudden start, you know, getting a little bit, liberal with? I mean, my gosh. And the Gemara realizes it. The Gemara backs away right away. But what even drives the Gemara to even consider such an extreme possibility? Connection between chametz and matzah. So the Gemara is also a classic example methodologically. Very often when we go from a havamina to a maskana, we are not always rejecting the assumption. Sometimes we're just rejecting the application. Sometimes we're mamish throwing out the baby and the bathwater, we're rejecting everything. But here you see a perfect example of the other phenomenon, where the Gemara accepts the assumption, but it finagles and it plays around with the application. So the Gemara says, oh, one second, let's just move around the chairs. We'll agree to your connection to matzah and chametz, let's just start in the other direction. What's the other direction? Obviously. Of course! Women are cannot eat chametz. Are you kidding me? Of course! And once you say it's also time to eat chametz, well, since there's a connection in chametz and matzah, memela, of course, now they're also going to be chayiv in matzah. And in fact, that is how we paskin. Even though matzah is a mitzvah on grama, it is one of the exceptions that women are absolutely midaraisa every bit as much as men, obligated to eat matzah, based on what? The connection to chametz. So even the maskana is very important. That even though we usually have a rule of mitzvah says my grandma, women are pater, we break that rule because of the connection to chametz. I'm just pointing out that in lomdas, conceptually, the havamin is even more extreme and more telling. But the basic thrust of the Gemara is the same. And it's consistent with our five ingredients Gemara we saw a minute ago. Namely, the Gemara gives tremendous weight to the pasuk that compares matzah and chametz. And the question is there anything else? Again, lemaisa, shitchi, superficially, if you will, technically, we saw just two examples, there's one or two more I could give you, we don't have time, where the Gemara learns halachos, one from the other. The question is there even more? Could there be even more? So this was the basic idea that I heard from Rosenblatt those years ago, and he basically just spelled out what is implicit in what we've been saying until now. But, you know, it's like many things in life, it's only obvious after someone else says it. As far as I had never heard anyone say it before, I found some other achronim I think say something similar. I don't think he had seen them, and he was happy when I showed them to him. But it's a really, whether it's him or other achronim, either way, it's a very creative and I think very compelling idea. And he wanted to say as follows. The deeper message from these Gemaras is that on some level, there are two kiyumim of matzah. There's matzah as a mitzvah per se. Matzah has its own identity, to be sure, but Erev Tochel Matzos. But matzah also has a role to play, perhaps even a mitzvah, perhaps a kiyum ha-mitzvah. Matzah also has a role to play as the demonstrative rejection of chametz. L'mashal. If I spend my whole holiday not eating matzah after the Seder, but of course not eating chametz, so on a passive way, I have avoided chametz. Now, listen, it's better than eating chametz, don't get me wrong. But I haven't rejected chametz. How do you reject chametz? Only one way. You eat the anti-chametz. The thing which could have been chametz, but isn't. The thing which is defined as non-chametz. That is a demonstrative, proactive rejection of chametz. Matzah, if you forgive the expression, is the anti-chametz. So, how far do we want to push this? So I found a number of years ago, in number 4, that the Onig Yontif, who was one of the great earlier achronim, the Onig Yontif says something, not 100%, but very close to this, and the Onig Yontif goes so far as to say perhaps both of these phenomena, both of these elements, both of these dinim, are even present at the Seder itself. Perhaps the mitzvah of eating matzah at the Seder night includes both. I ate matzah and I didn't eat chametz. That would be perhaps the most extreme. However, the Tashbetz, who was right on that end of the Rishonim, kind of early Achronim, the Tashbetz in his counting, his minion of the mitzvos, known as the Zohar HaRakia, which has absolutely nothing to do with the Zohar, which is a scary name. But the Zohar HaRakia, so he writes, in terms of counting the mitzvos, that one of the mitzvos he wants to add, in addition to the mitzvah of eating matzah on the Seder night, Linius dati mosif mitzvah acheres. So I want to add one mitzvah. Vehi lifrosh me'achilas chametz kol shivas mei Pesach. To avoid eating chametz all 7 days. Now, what is that? That's not a new mitzvah. That's called bal tocha chametz. That you don't need a tashbetz for that chiddush. That everyone who counts mitzvos counts an isser of eating chametz. But he continues. What is it? Roy limnos shivas yamim toch alav matzos. Linius lifrosh me'achametz b'chal hamatzos. That by eating matzah, he's basically saying, you know, not so many words, this idea of Rosenzweig. He wants to count as a new mitzvah, but we would call perhaps an iser aseh, that by eating matzah, I am not eating chametz. That's not the same thing as just passively avoiding chametz. That's bal tocha, that's lo tocha chametz. Shivas yamim tocha matzos is a demonstrative rejection of chametz. Now, one major area where this would play a nafkamina is the issue of bracha. We have a phenomenon of chiyuv versus kiyum at the sister holiday of Pesach, which is, of course, Sukkot. Tezvav. Right? The mitzvah of eating a kezayis, chiyuv, I should say, of eating a kezayis in the sukkah is only on the first night, or in Chutzlar, the first 2 nights of Sukkot. So the middle of Chol HaMoed, or the last day of Yontif, Hoshana Rabbah, let's say, do you have to eat in the sukkah? The answer is no. You want to eat apples, you want to eat candy, so eat in your house, you don't have to. But if you do eat in the sukkah, there's a mitzvah. Now let me ask you a question. If I do eat in the sukkah, especially if I have hamotzi or make a mezonos, do I say leishem basukkah, the whole yantif of sukkahs? You betcha. The question is, what about matzah? If you eat matzah in the middle of Chol HaMoed, do you make a bracha or not? So the Magen Avraham in number 5 says, of course you don't make a bracha on matzah. Of course not. Why not? Because he says simply, he says this is not like Sukkot, because Sukkot is an idea of a kiyumis. But the Magen Avraham, in essence, what is he doing? The Magen Avraham rejects the Vilna Gaon. The Magen Avraham holds like the Shulchan Aruch, like the Rambam, like the Meiri, like a simpler son of the Gemara, that after the Seder, you might as well have chicken soup, and you might as well have gefilte fish. There's no kiyum at all in having masa. So of course, there would also be no bracha. That's easy. The question is, are there other answers to the issue is, I should say, are there other answers to this question? And if I find anyone who gives me any other answer, what do I have to ask myself? Why didn't he give the obvious answer of the Magen Avraham? So for example, the first person to ask this question was the Baal HaMor, none other than the great Rishon, the Baal HaMor. The Baal HaMor, as we know, more or less lived at the same time and place as the Meiri, a little bit before the Meiri, but from the same place, southern France, Provence. And the Baal HaMor was the first person to ask the question. And he gives a whole convoluted answer. He avoids the obvious answer and gives the most convoluted answer. And he basically says, listen, when it comes to Sukkah, we know, especially in Eretz Yisrael or in the more milder climates, that the real mitzvah, which is popularly fulfilled, is also to sleep in the Sukkah. And Chazal have an assumption, which has been tested many times by college students during finals week and other yeshiva guys at various points, could you go more than 3 days without sleep? Right? Professionals on a deadline, also the people over these centuries are trying to disprove this. But the bottom line is, Chazal assume that you cannot go more than 3 days without sleeping. They assume that is a physical reality. So says the Baal HaMor, you could not get, even though it's true there's only a chiyuv to be in the sukkah on the first night of sukkahs, but since there's a mitzvah to sleep in the sukkah, and you can't go more than 3 days without sleeping, The reality is that memela, you're going to have to be in the sukkah at some point. So even though that doesn't make it a chiyuv, because it's a physical necessity, not a spiritual necessity, but given that the Torah knows about the physical necessity, if you do it, it's at least a mitzvah, it's a kiyum. As opposed to matzah, you know, you're in digestion, you know, no one's running, and says, ooh, it's been 2 days, I'm in withdrawal, I need more matzah. But you can go plenty of days without matzah, right? And plenty of people go 357 days a year without matzah. Well, 8 days is more than enough for most people, right? So, you know, some people like thinner, some people like it thicker, it's a whole complicated thing. So, says the Baal HaMor, since it's not necessary to have any matzah the rest of Yom Tov, if you do have it, it's a nothing. You know, there's no bracha, I say. If you do say it, there's no bracha. What about Sukkot? Sukkot is different, because he says, there, you had to sleep. Now, the question is, what to take from this Baal HaMor? It's not obvious. I'm not saying it's mukhach either. But the nagging question is, why didn't the Baal HaMor, for goodness sake, just give a simple answer? Because the Gemara says it's a reshus all 7 days. There is no such Gemara, which we started with. There's no such Gemara like that by Sukkot. In other words, why didn't the Baal HaMor just give the Magen Avraham's answer? Then we could have called it the Baal HaMor's answer. So, it could be that he, in the end, really agrees with the Magen Avraham. I'm not saying this is Mukhrach. But I think it's very, very likely, and there are some Achronim who suggest, that perhaps it implicit, he never says the word kiyumis, he never says anything like that. But perhaps the reason he's struggling and so creative and so convoluted to avoid the obvious answer, perhaps it's because he is, so to speak, preceding and predicting, if you will, what the Vilna Gaon eventually said explicitly, which is that maybe he holds that there is a kiyum. It's just what he holds, that not every kiyum do you make a bracha on. I saw, for example, the Avnei Nezer, who mentions that there used to be there was a time where it was popular to make a bracha. In certain communities in Europe, people were making a bracha. And Avnei Nezer was very against it. The Maharsham was Rav Shwadran. Some of you may have heard, or you may have read some of the Pesach Krohn books, the Maggid of Yerushalayim, that's Rav Shalom Mordechai Shwadran. So he is the namesake and grandson of the Maharsham. He was named after his grandfather, the Maharsham, who was a great Galatziana Hasidish Rav and a great posek. So he also says in his time and day, he saw people making brachos on Chol HaMoed, eating matzah, and he thought it's a toast, it's a mistake. But where did they get the mistake? They got it because they compared it to Sukkot. So the Avnei Nezer says, Mikamakom lemadnu shem ochel matzah b'shar yomim, hu osa mitzvah, kmosh osa mitzvah ha'ochel b'sukkah b'chol chag, mitzvah zu hainu shem ochel lechem, tzar shehe matzah. Now I do not think he's saying our more razzle-dazzle, Rav Rosenzweig and Lumbus. I think if anything, he's just saying the Vilna Gaon. That, you know what, it's a mitzvah, but not every mitzvah do you make a bracha on. But, you know, he's not really making a firm stand. But what he sets us up for, which I found, and this was what the first time I found this, and I remember I showed it to Rav Rosenzweig, he was so happy. The Stechemet is an encyclopedia. I may have quoted it, maybe some of you other may have quoted it. So it's a very difficult to use encyclopedia, because it was before, like, you could put a whole book on, like, you know, the computer and then, like, cut and paste afterwards. Like, so he would come up, he'd find things, people would send him letters after he'd finished the topic. So he would just stick it in. See, in the middle, he finishes his matzah discussion. Now he's, well, what's after matzah? Matzitsa. I'm making that up, but it could have been. You know, matzitsa is what you do with the blood after the bris. Oh, someone just sent me a letter about matzah, I'll put it in there. It's a very difficult to use encyclopedia for that reason. But he was a very brilliant person, and he corresponded with every Talmud Chacham, those who were famous, those who weren't famous, of his day. He was a Sfarish Talmud Chacham. He finished up his life. Who knows where he died? I've told you this, haven't I?
No.
Hebron. Did you guys ever go to Hebron? Part of the official Hebron tour. Chaim Chizkiu Medini. That was his name. He finished up the Sechemet in Hebron. The Lubavitcher Rebbe's daughter-in-law, who was a big Tzioni, had moved to Hebron, and when her husband wanted to go back, she stayed. And that's why Chabad has a very big kesher to Hebron. The original versions of the Stechemet were published by Kehut, which is the Lubavitcher printing press, even though the Stechemet had nothing, he himself was not Lubavitcher at all. And there's still a kesher between, you see, if you go there, they have part of the tour in Hebron, tells you about him. So he sends letters, and he includes letters from all sorts of people. Wouldn't you know it, that one of the letters, who Mamish says this whole vort about Chametz and Masa and the anti-Chametz, more or less, those are my words, but who says it? Somebody who I never heard of, named Shlomo Zalman, who just happens to be from the city of Brisk. And so you couldn't get any better, you know? Shlomo Zalman of Brisk. I don't know who he was. He wasn't Reb Chaim of Brisk. But maybe there was something in the air that helped people think very sharply. So Shlomo Zalman of Brisk sends a letter to the Stechemed, and he's discussing the issue of Matzah Kol Shiva. And look what he says, and we're going to end with this. Ladati hapa'uta. He's very humble. He says, in my simple mind, my non-such sharp mind, near l'chalek, ki b'layla harishona, hu mitzvah matzah, chiyuvis misarasma. But neitam ha-mitzvah be'etzem, sheshba. Matzah at the Seder night, that's the mitzvah of matzah, per se. Why are you eating matzah? Because it's matzah. That's the first night. Avotol shiva, yimei ha-pesach, but the rest of Yontif, who rock mitzvah, it is a mitzvah, but lo mitzvah atzma. It's not an inherent or per se mitzvah. Ach laharos shelo yochal chametz. It's a way of laharos, of demonstrating that you're not eating chametz. Ki b'chol lo tasa lo yinikar kiyum shemoneh milasosav l'gzeres ha-melech, ki hu b'shev al tasa. Lo yachmutz atal lechol klal. Maybe the reason I'm not eating chametz and I'm just eating chicken soup, I'm just eating fruits, it's because I'm not hungry for something, and I'm not interested in starch, or, you know, my stomach is full still from the Seder, you know what I mean? Ulam, but mitzvahs lo tocha chametz, but so regularly if we don't do a losase, it's not obvious. Maybe the reason I'm not eating pig is just because I don't like it. Who said you're not doing it for religious reasons? But usually that's enough. The ikkar is just don't do it. When it comes to matzah, we want something more. When it comes to matzah, have you mitzvah laharos befoal? The only way to make this demonstrative rejection is if you eat something which has the exact same ingredients, it's just not chametz. Because let's be honest about how much you love matzah. If you could have the hamburger with bread, you would. So if you're eating it with matzah, it must be that it's an absolute religious motivation and a rejection of chametz. Shaper havi mitzvah b'chol shiva nifra. As a result, says the Shlomo Zalman of Brisk, that pshat in the mitzvah kiyumis kol shiva. Yimei pesach b'chilasa shemekayim alusasei. It's not necessarily a mitzvah asei of eating matzah kol shiva. It is what we call an iser asei. It's a positive fulfillment of a losasei. Leval tochal chametz v'necha shaper d'lekachum b'varchen. And you wonder why we don't make a bracha? So again, according to the Vilna Gaon, maybe we would make a bracha. We'd make a bracha on other mitzvah kiyumis, or maybe not. You could, you know, it's an open question. But says the Stei Chemed, I have a better reason. And I saw just recently, like every year I add like another source to the shir. So I just saw, about a year ago maybe, the Birkei Yosef, the great Svater Shaposek, says the same thing. That is, why do we make a bracha on matzah kol shiva? Not like the Magen Avraham, that it's nothing like a chicken soup. And not even just because of some technicality, even though it's mitzvah kiyumis. I'm not going to make a bracha. But rather, because in its essence, what is matzah kol shiva? In its essence, it's a lo sasei. It's not a fulfillment of a mitzvah, as much as it's a demonstrative rejection, and a fulfillment, if you will, of a lo sasei. And we never make brachos on lo saseis. Now, usually we don't make brachos on lo saseis, because it's passive. There's no maisa to make the bracha on. It's not doing a maisa. But here we have a unique halachic creature. The positive fulfillment of a lo saseh. And even though I'm doing something, I'm mimicking even what I did at the Seder night. I'm eating a kvayis matzah, let's say. But in essence, what's the kiyum? The demonstrative rejection of chametz. And therefore, in its heart of hearts, in the pnimius, what is the kiyum? It's a rejection of chametz. That's a lo saseh. An affirmative rejection, but still a rejection of chametz. And therefore, he says, that's why we don't make a bracha. And that is exactly the way of Rosenzweig wanted to explain it as well. So you could even, perhaps, even push this a little bit into the Lashon of Vilna Gaon and say maybe that's what he meant. Could be. Or it could be that we have a third shita. It could be that there's a mitzvah kiyumis, all shiva. It could be there's a reshus. And it could be that this is now the new middle position, if you will, which is not nothing. It's also not a mitzvah kiyumis. It's the active fulfillment of a losase, or as I put it, the anti-chametz, the demonstrative rejection of chametz. And I think just as one last word, even al pidrush, you know, the Gemara Bracha says that chametz is like the Yetzer Hara. That's the famous mashal. So I think also there's a good muster here also, and that is that most of the time, we want to avoid the Yetzer Hara. It's not a good idea to be a cool guy and to be a hotshot and to run, you know, right up to the edge of the cliff and oh, I didn't fall. It's not a great way to live life. Most of the time, the best way to do is you have the Yetzer Hara, you have the lo sase, we try to avoid it. But there are times in life where just avoiding things is not enough. There are times in life where someone has to stand up, if you will, and make a stand. And there are certain things which are so bad, it's not just to avoid them, we need to really actively destroy them. Now, what those are, you can ask your rabbi or your parents or other people who can provide you with wisdom. I'm like a mercenary, you know, I come and I leave. But I think just as a rayon, just to think about, especially as you go through and see learning some Pesach stuff in the next few weeks, start learning Pesach stuff in a few weeks. So think about that. I think this is, I mean it mainly Alpi Lomdus, but I think even Alpi Drush, there's a structure here which you could apply in many different ways. All right, have a great Shabbos.